Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or The Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited to have today for you and with me, Dr. Marissa Cohen, who is amazing, so smart, gave a great TEDx talk that I didn't want to stop watching. She's a relationship scientist, obviously has her PhD, is a marriage and family therapist, and she's the founder of Embracing Change Marriage and Family Therapy. She's amazing. We're going to talk a lot today about dating and relationships and how you can start to have better relationships, obviously in the dating world and everywhere in your life. Marissa, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for that lovely introduction.
Tell us your story. You were married in your 20s and just kind of let's go from there.
Yeah. So I actually am a marriage and family therapist now. I've always had an interest in studying relationships. My former career, I was a psychology professor and I studied relationships from the academic side of the house. So I was really interested in how people find partners, what makes some relationships successful, what makes them thrive, and what leads others to maybe face some sort of challenges along the way. And after doing a lot of both quantitative and qualitative research in the field, I fell in love with people's love stories and wanted to understand at a deeper level, what is making relationships successful? What is making people feel fulfilled? And that led me to actually leave higher ed, doing that full time, and start a private practice now as a marriage and family therapist.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So tell us what you think about dating apps.
Dating apps. I love them. I also hate them.
Sounds like everybody. Love,
yeah,
hate.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty much every single client that is single that, winds up coming in with this experience. Full disclosure, I met my husband on a dating app. But it's something that can be really challenging for people. And I think that the narrative that's out there right now is that you must be on an app in order to find a partner. And that is simply not true. And it's most important to be able to check in with yourself and to know what you are comfortable with, what you're not comfortable with, and why. And if you are an individual who does not want to be on a dating app, that is completely fine. And there are still many wonderful ways that you can meet a person in the real world. Many of the people that you will meet in the real world are probably simultaneously on a dating app too. But, one of the most important things is it's not the app per se that dictates the experience. It's more so your approach to online dating, which is going to affect what you get out of that experience.
Ooh, tell us more about that, like mindset?
Yes, yes. Mindset is a huge component of it. I think that it's really important that you think about, one, what are you looking for? Is this a long-term relationship? Is it more of a short-term casual relationship? Which is fine, but really be open and honest with yourself. So a good amount of self-reflection is required about what you want, what you need. And a lot of people put tons of pressure, and I understand that, social media, social comparison, where it's just that they have to find the one by a certain point in time. And if you are able to, of course, easier said than done, treat this as a wonderful way to expose yourself to other people that you might not normally connect with, to learn more about them, and to assess that interpersonal connection or compatibility. It's a learning experience. And if you're able to take it from that perspective, you're going to feel a lot better versus kind of going in and putting so much pressure, which leads to anxiety and can certainly lead to dating fatigue.
Anything you do from a place of fear doesn't lead to good results. And right. We all know that, right? And if this sounds like you and you're debating getting on an app or you just haven't had success, for the good Lord's sake, get some help around this. Find a therapist that will help you with your mindset. Get a coach, wink, wink, hint, hint. Do something that's going to help you look at online dating and dating with fresh eyes, with hope, with psychotic optimism. Because if you're feeling gloom and doom about this, you are not going to see good people on the apps.
Psychotic optimism. I like that. Well, I mean, it's true. It's the way in which you approach dating or an actual date itself is going to affect what you get out of it. And if you're at that point, and you know, a lot of people can hit that point where it's just like, you know what, it's a numbers game. I just have to keep going out, keep plugging. And okay, great. Like, we do want to get to know a variety of different people. It helps us learn more about ourselves and what we're interested in. But if you get to that point where it becomes a job, it's, you're not even being present in that moment, giving yourself the opportunity to settle in and to really get to know the other person. It's, you're just kind of operating with this end goal of like, yes, no, second date. It takes the joy out of it. It takes the fun out of it, and it clouds your judgment.
It's so true. I mean, we have really specific guidance that we give to our clients at Smart Dating Academy around that. So it doesn't feel like a job. So it's not becoming something that you're hyper fixated on. How do you keep the joy in it? For example, nobody goes on more than two dates a week, right? And how do you put it into your day, right? I always say 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening, shut off the notifications. I want you to feel like it's a little bit of your day, just like getting off of your desk and going for a walk for 15 minutes. And in the evening, take a walk after dinner, right? That's it. That's how dating should fit into your life besides going on the date. So you've got to have a fresh, new approach to something to be successful.
Yes, it has to be a part of your day, not your entire day. And I think that to your point about shutting off notifications, the way that a lot of the apps are set up, of course, it's dopamine hits. So you're getting a wink or a like or something that's going to keep you back on the app and constantly plugged in. And that in and of itself winds up becoming draining. There's actually something that is circulating social media right now called stack dating, where it's the idea of just like stack up your schedule. The more dates that you could fit in, it's kind of like going through them almost like interviews. And that's incredibly stressful.
Oh my gosh, it's so hard to do that. It's like, imagine, you know, I did a segment on Good Morning America about a girl that went on 28 Hinge dates in 28 days, right? And it was like, wow, like it's like going on 28 job interviews, right? The first two might be exciting. Maybe the last two are exciting because you know you're at the end of your rope. But how do you keep all, you know, dates 3 through 26? It's like, oh my gosh, it's paralysis because of too much choice.
Right.
Ultimately, right? It's like those old studies where if you have 80 kinds of jam or jelly in a store, right? People just walk by it because it's overwhelming, versus if you just have three different jars or somebody sampling orange and raspberry and cherry, they're probably going to buy one out of the three because the options are constrained and it doesn't seem as hard to make a decision.
Exactly. I mean, that's a classic. It is paradox of choice. And people get decision fatigue as a result of this. And that's what leads to them just becoming so disillusioned and fatigued by being on the apps. And, you know, to that point of going on all of these dates was it 28 dates in 28 days? That's, yeah, sure. You remember the beginning, you remember the end, primacy, recency effect for
right.
students out there.
Exactly.
The ones in the middle, it just kind of, it all becomes a blur. And the only way that you would actually be able to remember all the components is if you were to go home and write like almost like case notes about the date. And then it's just, well, that doesn't quite capture the experience, does it? We're distilling this interpersonal connection into, you know, bullet points on an Excel spreadsheet to try to recall what that felt like. And that's really challenging to do.
Yeah, 100%.
A little bit of disclosure just regarding that. I actually tried something very similar and I wrote this up earlier in the year. Actually, I think this was in Well and Good. And I was, you know, kind of talking about the whole idea of the epidemic of loneliness. I was like, all right, New Year's resolution. I'm going to go on 31 friend dates for the 31 days of January. And it was an amazing experience in the sense that I connected with a bunch of really wonderful people. But I have to tell you that at a certain point in the middle of the month, I was tired and I was just like, all right, well, now it's just become like another appointment in the schedule. And I remember telling people towards the end of the month, like, you know, this was my plan, this was my goal, we're going to kind of do this, but we're going to have to circle back and have this like real genuine connection where the two of us can just like spend time. Because you experience fatigue by the end of it, because it was when you first started engaging in, I'm connecting with others because I genuinely want to connect with others. Now I'm doing it because I just have this goal and I'm checking boxes. It loses the value.
And these were 31 existing friends that you have. You literally said, I'm going to connect with 31 of my friends one day a month.
This was actually, when I did it, it was, I put out a call on social media and my goal was to expand my social circle. So I put out a call and I just said, hey, if you know someone who you think I'm likely to get along with, set me up on a friend date. And I wanted to keep it as open as possible. So I made it all virtual coffee, virtual drinks. I could work around people's schedules. So I started getting things kind of plugging into my calendar that way. And then I just wound up filling in the rest of my calendar with people who I know, but have lost touch with over the years for one reason or another, and wanted to reconnect with. So it was a mixture of people that I knew and I was meeting for the first time.
Interesting. And how did you find this whole experiment? Like, what were your conclusions?
My conclusions is, don't try to put that much into your calendar when it's already quite packed. But it's really like, I understand this epidemic of loneliness. And that was really the reason for embarking on this, because we can be surrounded by people. Less so now that people are working hybrid post-pandemic or sometimes working from home. When we do connect with others, it's often virtually and for a specific purpose. So we're kind of missing that, you know, in-office just connection. So we're less surrounded by people now than we used to be, but we can still be surrounded by people and feel very, very lonely.
That's what's so fascinating.
Yeah, and it requires a lot of strength to go, and I will say, open up conversations with people who you haven't spoken to in years. It put me in a very vulnerable place, but I'm glad that I did it, because, you know, some of those connections that I had restarted, those have continued throughout the year. And, you know, it's the goal is to keep this connection ongoing.
I can tell you, I've been thinking a lot about this also, personal anecdote. Sometimes smart daters, you know, I like to share about my own life. And I find I know a lot of people. I have a lot of friends. I have a very social job, right? And you're right. You can still feel lonely surrounded. I have a great husband. I have great kids. I have family that lives proximally. The times I feel best and where I are when I have a true connecting conversation with someone in my life. Doesn't have to necessarily be a best friend, but somehow where I feel comfortable sharing what's actually going on in my life. And I feel like this person has shared back with me something similar. And that connection is irreplaceable. And I get off of a phone or get off of a walk and I'm like, wow, that felt really good. It's not just time spent with people, with new friends, taking a walk, learning about each other. I didn't find that fulfilling. I find it really fulfilling when people are disclosing and I'm disclosing. So if that helps you, dear listener, in figuring out, God, I know so many people, and yet I don't feel like I have a lot of people. I feel lonely. Really think about that.
Yes, I love that. And that requires reciprocity in the relationship. So you're giving, the person is giving back, and it requires a lot of vulnerability. And in order to be in that vulnerable state, there needs to be this feeling of safety. And sure, you're going to be more vulnerable and you might get to deeper levels of connection with people who are in your close inner circle, who you trust, but you can also create that interpersonal connection with someone that you just have a shared experience with. So you're both, like, you know, online waiting to pay at the grocery store, and you just turn to one another. Maybe you see something in a magazine that, like, strikes both of you as funny. You've now had this shared experience, and just even that connection, it's all of these, you know, unplanned, sometimes planned is okay, but, you know, unplanned moments of interacting with another person that we were basically robbed of, you know, during the pandemic. And I think that as we, you know, kind of get back to and the new normal, that overused phrase, we're trying to figure out a balance that really works for us so that we don't feel lonely even when surrounded by tons of people.
Now, let's bridge into, speaking of relationships and feeling lonely, one of the things I know both you and I are students of is Dr. John Gottman. Mm-hmm. And you talked about, and we talk about this as well at Smart Dating Academy, it's great to get out there and date, okay? And maybe you find someone who is the lid to your pot, right? Now, the question is, you know, we're always quick to say, well, this person is doing this, and I don't like this, and these are the red flags here. But what happens? Can we turn the mirror and look at ourselves and say, what am I bringing to this? And I love, right, Gottman talks about the four horsemen of, what do you call it, relationship conflict?
Yeah, the four horsemen of relationship conflict. But this can be relationships broadly defined. While a lot of the research was focused on romantic relationships, it's basically understanding the rules, the unspoken rules of engagement, and how you share your needs and respond to the needs of another person. So it could be helpful to understand what you might employ in conversation, be it with a romantic partner, a family member, a friend, or a coworker.
Yeah, let's go through those, and let's go through it, you know, even as a single person who has friends, family, is going out on dates. How can we make sure that we're not deploying one of the four horsemen, which I'll say are criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling? Let's talk about what these are, and then how we can stay away from them, and maybe identify people that are doing this to us so we can, you know, have fulfilling relationships with people that are good relationship bets.
Yes. And it's important because, you know, it leads to fulfilling relationships, because ultimately what it's doing is it's making sure, by identifying what you might employ, what others are employing, you can come up with ways to walk this back over time so that you are able to feel truly heard and understood by the person that you're speaking to, and that you're creating this safety and this sense of support between you. So just disclaimer that I want to share first with all of the listeners is that as I talk about these, you might start to, you know, some of them might resonate with you, and that's totally okay. Just want to normalize that, because chances are you have gone to a place of criticizing another person during an argument. And a lot of it is because this has been reinforced over time. maybe you have learned that, you know, when I'm feeling really, really angry and frustrated, if I just go and throw out something, a critical statement, it's like, all right, argument's over. Now that person is actually listening to me. So this may have been reinforced over time, and this may be what you feel like is the only way that you can truly be heard. However, it's not what we fight about, but how we fight that matters. So Amen. Even if it's bringing you short-term satisfaction in terms of like, okay, I was able to win the argument, long-term, what it's really doing is it's eroding the relationship. So again, if you hear these and you find that these are some of the things that you drop into difficult conversations or arguments, it's okay, because the first step is identification, and then we'll talk about some of the repairs. So I'll talk about criticism and contempt together because they're so similar. Criticism is basically attacking a person's character. So saying something like, you're such a slob, or, oh, you're so lazy.
And you're so disorganized. That, you're a follower, not a leader, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a label.
And basically, I'm feeling hurt. I'm going to hurt you. So it's just easy. I know the Achilles heel. I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to win the argument. End game there. And the problem with this, of course, is that the fight may be about something. Doesn't even need to be anything big. It may be a disagreement over leaving a wet towel on the floor and just saying something like, you're such a slob. The towel situation will eventually get resolved. You will talk about roles and responsibilities in the household, but what is a person going to remember long after that fight's over is, my partner thinks I'm a slob. My partner thinks I'm a slob. That is very hurtful. And this affects the relationship over time, and it can lead to built up resentment for one another. Contempt is very similar to criticism. Contempt is essentially criticism, but it's coming from a place of superiority. So when describing this, I tell people that it's criticism with a bit of like sarcasm on top. So it's kind of crossing that line from sarcasm to maybe just being mean. And that line is very difficult. You know, people aren't always on the same page with that. So, you know, oh, you're just like your mother, or something like that. It can be very, very detrimental to the other person when they feel like they're being personally attacked, because that's essentially what's happening.
Yeah, that's brutal. So it's a place of superiority. Like, mm-hmm. I know better than you do, so I'm going to attack your character because I'm superior to you.
Right, right. And it's basically creating a power dynamic within the relationship, which can be very detrimental. And to close these two out, criticism and contempt, the way that you can repair this is through the use of I language. And I talk about I language a lot with people, and this is very, very helpful. It is a skill that needs to be developed over time. And I language is when you focus on the problem and you focus on the behavior rather than on your partner. So, you know, for example, when you leave the towel on the floor, I get upset because I'm already running late trying to get out of the house in the morning, and I can trip over. So you're focusing on the issue itself, the behavior, which is leaving the towel on the floor, rather than saying to your partner, oh, you're such a slob. The reason why this is so helpful is it's letting your partner know why you're upset, why you're frustrated, why you're angry, fill in whatever emotion word needs to be put in there. So it's giving them an insight into your emotions. And it's also clarifying for them what the issue is. Because if you were just to pass the bathroom and just be like, oh, you're such a slob, what did I do? I don't know. So sometimes we take for granted, like, our partners aren't mind readers. Our friends aren't mind readers. So we have to be able to tell them, this is the thing that is upsetting to me, and this is why. It's not just the what, but it's the why. Of course, I just want to put out there, I language can be weaponized. And I've
totally. I was just thinking that. Like, yeah. I think you're a slob.
Exactly. I'm right. Upset because you're a slob. So
exactly.
And that's what I find. And that's why I said I language is a skill. It takes time to develop. I mean, if you think about it, if we're feeling really frustrated and we're just wanting to prove a point, which is easier, just kind of going for that, you're a slob, or getting in touch with your feelings and understanding why, it's challenging to do that. It requires us to sometimes take a beat, access our own emotions, and then calmly express them to our partners. So it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do, but I tell people that if you're just starting to keep track of, okay, I am going towards criticism, let me walk away from this conversation now so I can think about how I'm feeling, why I'm feeling that way, and then rejoin that conversation at a time and place when I can communicate what's really going on with me, then it's going to be more productive. And this takes time. It is a learned skill.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And now let's talk about defensiveness and stonewalling. And guys, remember, this isn't just relationship, romantic relationship, and marriage stuff. This is stuff that can happen, especially in families of origin, right? Who isn't triggered to some extent by family of origin? And we can slide back into those grooves so fast with parents and siblings.
Oh, I love that point. Yes. We can sometimes just go back to these old patterns, especially when they've been so well established with certain people. And the first, step is this psychoeducational piece, really understanding what these four horsemen are, and then reflecting on yourself to know which are the ones that I employ and which are the ones that I employ. It may look different with different people. Of course, there's a lot of variability. So defensiveness is when a person, rather than taking ownership for their role in a disagreement, will call their partner out on something else. So it's kind of just like deflecting. So the example with "you're such a slob" because the person left their towel out in the bathroom, it's like, well, what did you expect me to do? You took forever getting ready in the bathroom this morning. So throw it back to, I'm not going to even talk about my role in this. I'm now going to put this on my partner. This creates a lot of hostility in the relationship because now it's like, okay, I'm pointing out what you did. And we're like almost keeping the tabs on who's doing what wrong when and how many times are we doing things wrong. And you're not turning towards one another. You're only like keeping tabs on the issues in the relationship. And that can lead to resentment over time as well. So the antidote or the repair for this is basically just owning it. And this is, of course, easier said than done, I understand, but right? If you are able to own your role in anything, hopefully your partner, friend, parent, loved one, person you're just talking to for the first time that you want to build a relationship with will follow suit. And what that does is it creates this safe space. It creates a culture of appreciation for one another, and that will strengthen the bond. Along those lines, there's something that I've personally noticed in the therapeutic setting regarding defensiveness, and I actually coined a term for it. It's called personal lossing. And personal lossing is basically when you are personalizing a loss, personal lossing. So what happens is a partner expresses a need. And then rather than just view this as, oh, this is helpful information that can strengthen our relationship, you take that need and you internalize it almost as an attack on your character. So you internalize this as, oh, she's saying that she wants to spend more quality time with me. That must mean that she's feeling like I'm not showing up in a way in which I'm spending quality time with her. That must mean I'm doing something wrong in the relationship. And the person responds with defensiveness.
And
that can be really, really tricky.
And how do you avoid that? Because it's sort of, you're right, we go into survival mode as humans, right? And what do we want to do? We want to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen you every day this week, and right, I'm constantly calling you. What do you mean you want to spend more quality time? Now, remember, the person is just expressing a need. And sometimes it's very hard because people equate, oh, I have a need. Does this make me needy? So some people aren't necessarily as comfortable expressing needs. So we need to be warm and welcoming when a person does that. But this can essentially shut them down, and it create this very like hostile interaction you know, because of a lot of defensiveness. And it's really just important to slow down the conversation, slow down your response, take a deep breath, pause, think about it. What is this person really asking me for? And if clarification is necessary, tell me more about that. You know, what, why is this your need? I want to understand. And it may just be, you've done such a great job of seeing me all week, but I just want to make sure that we're really spending quality time with one another, because I feel like a lot of times both of us, I'm guilty of this too, both of us might sit down to dinner and we're both on our phones the entire time. So when I'm saying I want to make sure that we want to spend more quality time, it's for both the benefit of both of us. So it's not an attack on you. It's not anything that I'm indicating that you're not doing. It's just something that I've identified as a way to strengthen our bond.
I love that. And maybe what we can take from this, let's say I'm the person that feels like we spend time together, but we're not spending quality time, that I can turn towards my partner and own, like, we spend, you do a great job of being with me and we spend a lot of time together. I'm feeling on my part that when we have this time together, the TV's on or the phone is on, what I would love is at dinner, if we made it a technology-free zone, and maybe we each come to the table with three topics that we can talk about or three stories that happened from our day, and you come in owning it and then presenting a solution.
Mm-hmm.
For what you want, because if it's your problem, you know what you're looking for. So to your point, Marissa, it requires a little introspection. Mm-hmm. What do I actually want? Instead of lashing out and saying we're not spending quality time together, I would say, and if somebody came to me and say, Bella, we spend a lot of time together, but I want quality time, I would say, okay, tell me, what does quality time mean for you? How can we make this better?
I love that. I love that. It's such a positive frame to focus on. It's not what I don't want, but this is what I do want. Beyond that, this is why I want it. And also how I think that it can enhance our connection, benefit each of us as individuals and as partners. And essentially what that was doing was setting SMART goals. Like, this is a measurable way that we can, you know, spend quality time together. Here's a potential solution. And of course, that also invites a conversation around, well, what does quality time look like for you? What are ways in which we are in sync? What are ways in which we might differ? And how can we come to some sort of consensus or collaborate on what quality time would look like going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes I want to just take a step back, and we were talking about criticism and contempt, and there's so much out there in the world of therapy and TikTok therapy, which you and I were talking about, which is can be crazy. Be careful of who you're taking advice from. But it's really about, well, I need to speak my truth. I need to use my voice. I need to have boundaries, right? Okay. But you also have to say it's how you are doing these things is really, really important for getting things to a better place. You know, we talk about issues with parents, issues with siblings, issues with cousins, with neighbors, with friends. It's really taking that. And yes, it's fine. And there are some times you need to, you know, use your voice or have a boundary. But for most intents and purposes, unless somebody is an egregious narcissist or whatever it is you want to call them, I think doing things in the way Marissa and I are talking about will be so much more constructive for you.
Yes. And I love that you just brought in the whole TikTok to there. Oh, wow. I just said the whole TikTok. Whoa. Way to identify myself as a millennial there and not a Gen Zer. But anyway, with social media, honestly, I love that people are looking for information. People want knowledge. People want to improve their lives, their relationships. There's this desire for connection. I also love that we are becoming much more open to discussing mental health and relationships, but it is so important to be discerning of what information we're receiving, where that information is coming from, and how we're using it. And I've seen a lot of people just kind of pick up on, you know, certain terms, and they can use them, you know, narcissism is a big one. This person's a narcissist, or, you know, find this label. Well, I am avoidantly attached. Therefore, this is what I now know about myself. And it's just, you know, okay, let's explore this a little bit further. And it's really important to understand all of the nuances of some of these terms, these labels, diagnoses, and also just understand what they look like in the real world so that they don't become weaponized or lead to self-limiting beliefs of the self or of others. And yes, grateful that people are having discussions, but it's important that we make sure that we are having knowledgeable discussions and that we're hearing different viewpoints from credible sources.
Exactly. Just because someone has a gazillion Instagram followers or TikTok followers, just be, you know, I would just say eyes wide open as to who you're taking advice from. Is this somebody who's educated or well-established professionally in this space? Or is this someone who just is articulate and has a boatload of opinions? Mm-hmm. Be careful.
Right. And also it's important to know too, when people have advice that they're sharing, it may be coming from their own perspective, their own lived experience. Their lived experience is not necessarily your lived experience. What works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another person. And that's the benefit of working with a mental health clinician or a coach, because often you find that it's about helping the person better understand themselves and identify what works for them. I just realized we didn't get to our fourth horseman.
Yeah, I was going to bring it back to the fourth stonewalling horseman.
Yes. So Stonewalling is when a person essentially just shuts down because they've become so flooded during a heated exchange or a disagreement. And I'm sure most people have heard of the fight or flight response, where we're either getting ready to fight or flee a situation, which can, when we are confronted with something, but it's actually fight, flight, or flood. And flood is when we are just so completely overcome with stress, anxiety, that, like, you know,
we freeze.
And it's, we freeze, we shut down. And this is basically, you can tell when a person does this because they essentially look very closed off. They may, you know, kind of have this empty stare. And the issue is, a lot of people, when engaged in a conversation with a person who is stonewalling, may get very angry, very upset, because they're perceiving it as, well, the person just doesn't care what I have to say or what I think, or the person is choosing not to engage, when in fact, this is a biological, physiological thing. Like, they are flooded. They cannot process right now. And they may not even be able to articulate that they cannot process what is going on right now. So the other person, what do? Feeling upset, they often become louder and angrier. And the conversation may become very, very circular, and it's just not going anywhere. Best thing to do at this point, take a break.
Take a break. De-escalate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. De-escalation is so important. And for a lot of people, this can feel difficult. And if you're one of those people listening to this, that is okay. A lot of people, very much, especially in our culture of we need information now, want to find a solution in the moment. So taking time to just walk away, feel your feelings, get in touch with your emotions, and just reset yourself. Essentially, you need that parasympathetic nervous system to kind of kick back in and allow you to get to a place where you can have a productive conversation with another person. It need not be a long break. It could be 20 minutes. It could be an hour. You have to know what works for you. The one thing that I do tell people is indicate this. indicate this to the person. Don't just simply get up and walk away, because that can feel very frustrating to the person that you're speaking with. And some people say to me, well, I don't know how long I need. I'm really upset. That's okay. That's okay. But tell the person that. You can communicate that. I'm feeling overwhelmed. This conversation is getting too heated. I don't quite know how I feel about this. I need to collect my thoughts. Any of those things, all valid responses. Share that with your partner. Take that time and then re-engage it at a time when both of you are able to communicate with one another effectively.
100%. And I will tell you, it's okay to go to bed not resolved. In fact, we do this. I've been married for 26 years. Okay. We have two teenagers. There's a lot of stuff that goes on that isn't easily resolvable. It's okay to go to bed in the state of de-escalation. Like, you know what? We're having an argument about this. Let's step away. And we use the term de-escalate. Like, you know what? Let's take a break from this. Let's take a pause. It doesn't mean we're quitting. It just means we're going to go down those bad paths where words can start to feel mean. Let's take a break. Let's take a pause. And most likely when we wake up in the morning, we're automatically de-escalated, right? It's like, you know what? Here's what happened last night. Take those pauses from each other. It's like boxers going back to a corner. They don't just beat the hell out of each other for an hour and a half. We take breaks and then we come back to it. Ideally, the amplitude of our anger, our volatility, our defensiveness has come down because we physically removed ourselves from the other person. I tell in my house, when we de-escalate, I would say, go back to your own spaces. Everybody, there should be physical walls in between us, right? Let's go and chill out. It could not be a more effective strategy. And then you come back to this where you're getting out of the risk of being critical, being contemptuous, defense, right? And catch yourself in these. If you guys have taken anything from this, we are all humans. We all do and participate in these four horsemen if we are being really honest with ourselves. I'm sure John Gottman does this with Julie. I'm sure Julie does it with John. Nobody's perfect at the end of the day, because when we go home and we get into relationships, we're just consumers of this information. It requires practice.
I love that. I love that. Yes, it definitely does. These are learned skills and it does require work over time. And to your point about de-escalation, yeah, that physical separation is so important. What's also important is identifying each person's different. What do you need? Is it listening to music? Is it journaling? Is it, you know, to use a very big buzz term, what is your self-care? But for real, it's what do you need to essentially calm yourself down and bring you back to a place where you're feeling present, focused, and centered? Because the flip side, and which you might see in a boxing ring, is when they do take that physical separation, they're usually getting pumped up and amped up to get back into the ring even stronger. So we want this to be, you know, you're taking that beat, getting to a place of, okay, this is really what is important for me to express, that I can make sure that my needs are being heard, but then it's also important for me to be there to receive the information so that I can make sure the person that I'm speaking to feels heard and feels understood.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. Marissa, you're amazing. Are there any last gems you want to drop on our dear listener?
Just, you know, care for all of the relationships that you are in. They require work. This doesn't mean that it needs to be difficult work. At times it certainly can be, but it's so important that you want to, you know, spend time fostering them so that you can create these loving, strong bonds with family, with friends, with partners over your lifetime.
I love that. And remember, notice your own words. Notice your own thoughts. Notice how often you're prone to certain things, right? Listen to your inner dialogue and what you're saying out loud, what you're writing, and deploying the antidotes to these four horsemen. I know your relationships not only with others, but your relationship with yourself is also going to get better, because the best way to improve your relationship with yourself, get to know yourself. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast today, Marissa. Thank you for being on with us and for being awesome. If you want to check out more of Marissa, we're going to have her website and information in the show notes. And wishing you, my dear listener, an amazing week, free of criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. May you practice these, and may you, through these actions, put more love into your own life and put more love into the world. So until next week, have the most amazing week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.